pictures of dead children in Afghanistan, the victims of a US-led airstrike, have once again raised questions on accountability, the purpose of the foreign troop presence, and ways for bringing security back to a country that hasn't seen peace for a long time. I'm Huma Lezgi, and this is The Debate.
More than a dozen civilians killed, 11 of them children. These are the latest victims of the U.S. war in Afghanistan. The victims died in an airstrike by U.S.-led foreign troops in Shigal in Afghanistan's eastern Kunar province on Sunday. Their death comes just one day after six Americans, including a young female diplomat and three soldiers, lost their lives in the country. So how does the U.S. legitimize its presence in Afghanistan with thousands of lives lost on both sides and nearly $620 billion in American taxpayer money? President Barack Obama claims the U.S. is at war with al-Qaeda.
We have a clear and focused goal: to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat al-Qaeda.
But how can this be while it's providing material support to the al-Qaeda-affiliated al-Nusra Front in Syria? The armed group has been fighting the Syrian government for months while being funded and armed by the U.S. and its allies, including Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia. According to the New York Times, the CIA has been aiding Arab governments and Turkey in buying and transporting weapons to the insurgents in Syria since early 2012. Other reports even suggest Obama signing a secret order authorizing the CIA to provide support to the militants. With such revelations, it seems the idea put forward by Washington that it's at war with al-Qaeda is only designed to provide cover for other motives, including military action in other countries, like the decision taken by France to wage war in Mali against pro-al-Qaeda militants who were armed by the same Western and Arab countries during the war in Libya.
You're watching The Debate. I'd like to introduce our guest in Washington, Senior Fellow and Director of the Center for Political and Military Analysis with the Hudson Institute, Mr. Richard Waits. Thank you very much for being with us. I'd also like to introduce our guest in New York, Mr. Caleb Maupin. He's with the International Action Center. My first question to Caleb Maupin in New York: why do you think, Mr. Maupin, that victory has become so elusive for the U.S. forces in Afghanistan?
Well, it's pretty clear the United States is not in Afghanistan to fight against al-Qaeda. In fact, the people who laid the basis for al-Qaeda were U.S. allies in Afghanistan during the 1980s. In 1979, the people of Afghanistan had a revolution and began constructing what they called a people's democracy. Democratic youth leagues were formed that began construction all throughout the country. And the U.S. Met with the forces, the Mujahideen, people like Osama bin Laden, and used them to destabilize and eventually overthrow the People's Democratic Government in Afghanistan. And the people who laid the basis for al-Qaeda were U.S. allies. And it's pretty clear that the U.S. is in Afghanistan because, you know, there are many countries around the world that are rejecting the rule of Wall Street in the United States. Countries like Russia, Iran, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and having a base, having troops in the middle in Central Asia as they do is a way to assert their power and force. That's what it's really about. The fact that the U.S. is aligned with so-called al-Qaeda forces, in Syria, used them in Libya, it's pretty clear. And let's be clear about another thing. Often there's a lot of rhetoric coming from Washington, D.C. about fighting so-called radical Islam. But you'll notice about a lot of the governments that the U.S. has overthrown have actually been secular governments. Gaddafi's Libya was a highly secular regime. Saddam Hussein's Iraq was also highly secular. So it's pretty clear the U.S. is fighting in its own economic interests, not the interests of the 99% in the United States, not the interests of working class people in the United States, but the interests of a small group of very wealthy people in the United States and in the interests of Israel. That's what's
going
on.
So in response to the question of why are we not seeing victory by the United States in Afghanistan, the point you raised there is there's a different plan altogether in Afghanistan. Before we go to our guest in Washington on this, I'd just like to bring in a comment that's been posted on our Facebook page in response to this question, and we'll be back.
Well, the reality is that the Americans are frustrated They don't know what to do. What is the way out of Afghanistan?
Abdul Rauf Khan was the commentator that's posted that comment for us on our Facebook page. So back to Mr. Waits now in Washington on this. Now, Mr. Waits, some people there like that comment suggesting that the United States basically doesn't know what to do with the situation. We had the top U.S. military officer, General Martin Dempsey, saying that he believed parts of Afghanistan will be contested by the Taliban even after international forces complete their planned withdrawal by the end of 2014. So what has the U.S.'s longest war achieved?
I think that the we need to break down the different objectives. I mean, the one objective that initially overrode and decided the intervention was desire to prevent another attack like September 2011. I was at the Pentagon that day. I saw the plane smash into the building, and I could see why people wouldn't want to have that happen again. Mm-hmm. After they managed to remove al-Qaeda pretty much from Afghanistan, then things became more complicated because there initially was a desire to try and create something like a liberal progressive democracy, which you see in Western Europe, and that obviously didn't really take root in Afghanistan. And then people sort of lost attention. There was the invasion of Iraq, and that allowed the Taliban to revive. And since then, they've been trying to defeat the insurgency and leave behind a government that's friendly to the U.S. and that respects Western values. But they're not willing to stay there forever, hence the troop withdrawal.
They're not willing to stay there forever. Is that the impression that you're getting as well, Mr. Maupin?
Well, I think the U.S. has long-term plans of imperialist domination of the world. And setting going into Afghanistan and setting up a base is part of their long-term strategy. The U.S. has been sowing instability and chaos all throughout the Middle East, whether in Syria, you know, all throughout, and supporting the government of Israel as it continues to murder and commit aggression against its neighbors. So it's very clear that, you know, any talk from the United States of liberating people or coming to their aid, it is really false. And I think the fact that, you know, the talk of al-Qaeda continues to be used, that's an emotional thing. They can say, oh, you know, remember 9/11? See, that's why we have to go into someone else's country and murder people. The U.S. troops in Afghanistan are occupiers. Mm-hmm. They're occupiers. They've done horrific things, defaming corpses and awful, awful things in Afghanistan. Whenever someone goes into someone mm-hmm. else's country and is occupying them, you know, awful things happen, whether it's, you know, the occupation of Northern yeah. Ireland that continues. You know, wherever it goes on, you know, colonizers are brutal, and the things they do are brutal against the people they're occupying. So the okay. people of Afghanistan have the absolute right to resist the U.S. troops being in their country, and the U.S. troops need to leave so the people of Afghanistan can have their country back.
Right. There is a lot of questions about the purpose of U.S. troops in Afghanistan, whether they're going to stay in Afghanistan permanently or not. But before we continue with that discussion, something that Caleb Maupin raised earlier on, I'd like to bring up with our guest in Washington, is that he was saying, why should Washington be supporting militants when it has shared goals with them, for instance, in Syria, but then in Afghanistan it's fighting them? And he was referring to the support that the United States also gave to the Mujahideen back at the time of the Soviet invasion. So do you think that the United States should face this kind of criticism for its stance toward militants in different and various situations?
Well, it's a fair comment in that the U.S. is trying to struggle between the various factions and what it has. So in Afghanistan, it doesn't want the Taliban to come back into power because they were so closely affiliated with al-Qaeda originally, and there's a fear, although not really sure, that might have happened again. So they feel more comfortable with them out of power or in some kind of compromised government. But there's not really a good ally for the United States to work with there. And we've seen this problem also, as you pointed out, in Libya and in Syria. I mean, ideally in Syria, they'd like to have come to power a government such as we have in Turkey, you know, a popular government, Muslim-leaning, but allied to the West. But they don't really have a strong group like that. You've got a government which is now alienated itself from the West. And you've got radical insurgents who, if they come to power, could be even worse. And so the U.S. is trying to keep the insurgents weak and transition the current government out and put something better in its place. But as your viewers probably recall, they tried to do that in Iran in 1978-79, ease the Shah out, but keep in power some kind of friendly liberal government. But it didn't work. So.
Basically, the question here would be the type of policies that the United States is taking towards militants, towards what we call insurgents. One aspect that could be raised, for instance, about the Taliban militants in Afghanistan, let's put this question to Caleb Maupin, is we're seeing the United States battling the insurgents, the Taliban militants in Afghanistan, at the same time speaking about political engagements with them, speaking about a political way out of this, and even holding dialogue with them. They're opening an office, for instance, in Qatar. So how can this contradiction be explained?
Well, it's obviously a lot of hot air coming from the United States, because when people are being shot down in the street, when U.S. airstrikes and drones are murdering people in Afghanistan, the people of Afghanistan don't want dialogue with these occupiers. They want to resist. They want to resist this foreign domination of their country. And when the Mujahideen, you know, were sent into Afghanistan, you know, and the Soviet troops went in to defend the People's Democratic Government in Afghanistan. That was nothing like what the U.S. is doing now. The Soviet Union sent troops in at the request of the popular government of Afghanistan. And while they were there, not only did they defend them against the Mujahideen forces sent in by the United States, they also engaged in agricultural aid, and they did all kinds of tremendous things for the people of Afghanistan. And the people of Afghanistan largely supported the Soviet intervention against the forces, the Mujahideen, and the forces that were sent in by the United States. And I also want to make clear, you know, the other guest talked about how the government of Turkey is ideal. The government of Turkey is a member of NATO, and the government of Turkey has committed horrific crimes against the people of Kurdistan. It is a crime in Turkey to even speak the Kurdish language. People are in jail. So, you know, the government of Turkey that exists now is a puppet of the United States, has brutalized and murdered people, and it's funding these forces in Syria, which are not some popular democratic forces. These forces in Syria are, you know, a very extreme terrorists that go around cutting people's heads off, murdering civilians, murdering Christians, murdering Muslims, murdering all kinds of people left and right. These are terrorists that are being, you know, the U.S. is funneling money through the Turkish government in Syria. So I don't think the government of Turkey is ideal. You know, I don't think that's the case at all.
Okay,
all over the world, the U.S. is funding, you know, Al-Qaeda-like forces to commit crimes it's pretty clear the U.S. is trying to export its economic exploitation around the world, and the people of whether it's in Afghanistan, Iraq,
I want to get a reaction from our guest in Washington. But before I do that, let's just take a look at another comment that's been posted on our Facebook page specifically about this, and I'll be back with our guest in Washington.
War is a big spender for the U.S. and at the same time a money spinner through weapon sales. Instability in the Middle East is a guarantee for continual domination of the whole zone. It's well known that the U.S. supports, arms and sponsors Taliban discreetly, and desperation has led them to directly support Taliban in Syria. I don't need glasses to see this.
That comment posted by one of our viewers. I'll put the issues raised there to our guest in Washington, Mr. Waits. Two issues referred to there. One is we've got the U.S. supporting, arming, sponsoring Taliban discreetly, he says. And we know that the Karzai government has been alleging that the U.S. and Taliban are working together, colluding to create instability. And he says desperation has led the United States to directly support Taliban in Syria, or insurgents, basically, in Syria. So what's your reaction to that?
Right. The former accusation, I've not seen any evidence of that. But I think you raised an interesting question before that. Your argument was, how is it that the U.S. is, on the one hand, fighting with the Taliban, and on the other, trying to reach a peace agreement, peace talks with them? But I don't think there is a contradiction there. There's no way that the United States or the Afghan government can kill or capture all the Taliban. So by definition, we'll have to have some kind of peace arrangement. And the thinking is, on the one hand, you have dialogue, talks in Qatar or wherever they would be, but you need to continue the military pressure in order to encourage them to come to the negotiating table. Otherwise, they will do what the North Vietnamese did, which is just wait until all the U.S. troops leave and then occupy the country. So that's why you have this basically dual policy of talking while you're fighting.
Okay, but the question regarding this, Ms. Waits, is that a lot of people are saying, first of all, the Taliban are not all of them united on speaking with the United States or with the Afghan government. They're not for negotiations. And a lot of them would be concluding that it's not even in our interest to hold talks. We've come so far. Why should we just come up and sign a peace treaty and give up our fight now that we are progressing?
Yes, I concur with you that the Taliban itself does not appear to be united. There's there are different factions, some closer to Pakistan, some more hardline. The groups that we and the Afghan government have tried to talk with don't appear to be able to carry even a majority of the Taliban with them. So hence, again, why their hope is that you can get some of them to put down their arms through a talking, but you still need to continue the fighting.
Mm-hmm. So back to Caleb Maupin on this. I guess they're in Washington suggesting that as long as you can force or persuade some of them to lay down their arms, this is in itself some kind of an achievement. But we have people who are saying that unless all foreign forces leave Afghanistan, peace and security is not going to come to the country. What's your idea?
I think the people of Afghanistan have the absolute right to fight against the foreign domination of their country, and I think they will never be content with U.S. troops or U.S. puppets occupying their country and exploiting them. And, you know, the other guest raised the example of Vietnam. Well, since the National Liberation Front of Vietnam was victorious, the life expectancy in Vietnam has actually gone up by 17 years, 17 years longer. The average Vietnamese person lives 17 years longer than before the people were victorious and drove the U.S. troops out. There's not a single place in this world where the U.S. has brought peace or prosperity. Every time it occupies a country, every time it overthrows a popular government, the results are, you know, the people living, you know, there are people living in misery, whether it's Eastern Europe, whether it's Africa. Wherever the U.S. goes in and destabilizes and destroys, the results are always negative for the people. So it's very clear, and Vietnam is an example of that. The people of Afghanistan have the absolute right to resist the U.S., to resist the people that are terrorizing them and murdering them on a daily basis, and you know, that's all there is to it.
Well, one issue that we can raise here, I'd just like to bring in a quote by Malaya Joya. She's a writer, and she's written a book called A Woman Among Warlords. I'm quoting her words here. She says, "We are caught between two enemies." Pose this to Mr. Waits in Washington. "We are caught," she says, "between two enemies, the Taliban on one side and the U.S. NATO forces and their warlord hirelings on the other. Obama's military buildup will only bring more suffering and death to innocent civilians." This is not the first time that we're hearing this. The people view both what they call the occupation forces and the Taliban as their enemy. They're caught between them. They don't want any of them.
There is that sentiment among some of the Afghans, and I recall that President Obama plans to withdraw a lot of all the troops. They might leave a couple of thousand behind. The problem is we don't know if the proposition you laid out earlier was true. If all foreign forces leave, would that bring peace to Afghanistan? After the Soviet occupation was defeated, we actually ended up with a civil war. And that's what looks like would happen now. If all the foreign forces left, you'd have the Afghan government and the Taliban fighting, but then you'd also have various warlords, militia groups peel off and fight. And that may be a tolerable situation from people in America, because we're far away, but it would be very disruptive to the neighboring countries, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, Iran,
well,
and
Mr.
so
Waits,
on.
One
and
question
it would encourage
that,
countries
that
to try and intervene
what you just
and play
said,
their factions.
Concerning what you said is a lot of people may be asking, they've been here in huge numbers, 100,000, whatever. They haven't been able to help us fight the Taliban. What will a few thousand, if they stay in Afghanistan, do to help us, even if they do stay?
That's a good argument that people are making against it. We had the same argument in Iraq. At some point, the numbers that the Iraqis or the Afghans would allow the U.S. to keep, a couple thousand perhaps, is just not worth it because they'll have a more negative effect than they would positive. They'd have to spend all their time defending themselves. So at the moment, it looks like the United States and NATO would keep maybe 12,000 combat troops, limited to training and perhaps something like the Al-Qaeda, the bin Laden raid, something like that. But if it goes down much further, I would tend to agree. It's just not worth it. The Iraq scenario presents itself as an acceptable alternative. Just pull them all out and rely on the local balances to try and maintain stability. But Iraq, of course, as we know, is far from ideal.
Okay, we are running out of time. I'd just quickly like to give time to Mr. Caleb Maupin on this as well. If these several thousand are going to stay in Afghanistan, and we are hearing indications are General Dempsey saying that we're not in a hurry, that we would want these forces to stay in train. What will be their role and why would they be in Afghanistan? A lot of people suggesting that the U.S. is after permanent bases. What do you think?
Well, if the U.S. troops continue to stay in Afghanistan, they will not be there to aid the people of Afghanistan, and they will not be there to help the people of the United States either. They will be there to further the aims of Wall Street and of Israel and to further protect the interests of U.S. economic banking institutions and the wealthy 1% of the United States. Right now, all across this country, post offices are closing, schools are being closed down, hospitals are being shut down. This money should be spent on human needs. This money should be spent here at home in the United States to aid the people of the U.S. in this time of economic crisis with large unemployment. It should not be spent on murdering innocent people in Afghanistan and further occupying Afghanistan. The U.S. troops need to leave. They need to come home to be with their families. And the U.S. needs to stop acting as an exploitive imperialist force around the world. We need to strive for the kind of thing that the revolutionary government of Afghanistan strived for: people's democracy, equality, full employment, things like that. And it's a shame that the U.S. sent in the Mujahideen to tear down a people's democratic government in Afghanistan.
Caleb Maupin with the International Action Center with us there live from New York. Thank you very much. We have run out of time. A big thank you to our guest in Washington, Senior Fellow and Director with the Center for Political Military Analysis at the Hudson Institute, Mr. Richard Waits. Thank you very much, everyone, for staying with us on another edition of The Debate. From me, Homa Lesgi. Until our next program, goodbye.